Coming up on Chasing the Natty, with plenty of early season drafts in the books, it's time we take a look at some early season ADP values. We'll be looking at some of the general trends we are noticing before naming some players that we think are going too early and too late in drafts so far. We'll have all of that and more coming right after this.
Picks his way to the right and is tripped up, reaching for the end zone. Touchdown! What a start!
Give it to Reed, and there he goes! Nobody's gonna catch him! Touchdown!
It's caught! Jeremiah Smith! Touchdown, Ohio State! The legend grows!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in, everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the offseason at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we do here, head on over to campusofcanton.com and subscribe there with any of our phenomenal tiers. We have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether that's CFF, Devy, Campus of Canton Leagues, College IDP, College DFS, Underdog Best Balls. Really, if you play it, then we've got content, whether that's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. In fact, now, if you want to support the show even further, make sure when you do sign up for one of our yearly membership tiers, you use the promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y, to get 10% off your yearly membership. Again, that is the promo code NATTY, N-A-T-T-Y. If you can't do that, you can show us some love just by leaving a like, a comment, and subscribe on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast side of things, just leave us a 5-star review. Make sure you're following the show. Not only does that show us support, but also the game of college fantasy football in general some support. If you have any further questions or just want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me and the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty. And joining me today is do I call you a new face? Because you've been around for a while, but you've really kind of gotten into some of the content game now. But it is Elliot Mays. You might know him better as Bacon Fueled on Twitter. Elliot, welcome to the show, man. Glad to have you on.
Yeah, appreciate it. You know, your producer told me before we started recording that you were originally supposed to get Bud Elliot in here, but your interns just reached out to the wrong Elliot. So, but regardless, I'm happy to be here.
I mean, this is a happy accident as far as I'm concerned. Not that I don't love Bud Elliott, but clearly I got the next best thing here with sure. You, man. How are you doing, man? So I guess for those who might not know you, again, like, you've really just kind of gotten into the content game. I've known you because you've been friends with the likes of Froton and stuff like that. You've been putting out some CFB betting stuff the last year or so, and you really love CFF as well. But just kind of let people know who might not know who you are, what you kind of do, and what kind of stuff they sure. can expect from you.
Yeah, so I've been playing college fantasy football since 2006, and during that time I've played mostly redraft and keeper leagues. But the last few years I added in a bunch of best balls and dug pretty deep into the individual player props and that kind of thing. This year I'm looking to add some dynasty CFF to the mix, so might need some help with that from you and Nate, but trying to get in one or two leagues there, but just haven't found a home quite yet that I want to hop into. As far as content creation is concerned, you know, I'm really just scratching my own itch. The things that I produce, I put together for myself annually anyway. And this year I really just decided to publish those things to the community, I guess in the hopes that it might, you know, help others in some way and might help grow the game of college fantasy football, make it maybe a little less intimidating for newbies. I don't do much in the realm of like long form articles, player profiles, tracking player news, you know, guys like Volume Pigs, Purple Rain, CFB Depth, G5 Hive, and obviously all you guys at Campus Canton do a great job of kind of leading that charge. Lately, I've been publishing a lot of like infographics that just help showcase things that kind of otherwise might go overlooked or that might not be as easy to digest for people just staring at a spreadsheet. I also produce a number of CFF related tools surrounding stats, team metrics, player props, start sit tool. I recently published my schedule matrix, which is a FB schedule that is sortable by opponents, defensive SP plus metrics, or you can also sort it by points allowed, broken down by each of individual position group. I dabble a little bit in like graphic design and made some make T-shirts and stickers and stuff like that for folks for like league awards, or as I use it to taunt fellow league mates at live drafts. I know John Lobb rocks one of the shirts once in a while, so I appreciate that, John. This is also my first year publishing uploadable player rankings. I've always had my own rankings. This is just the first time I'm making them, I guess, public. And they're set up to be uploaded directly to Fantrax for drafting purposes. But I guess for anyone listening, please don't do that if you're in the draft with me. It'll throw me off. So, but I guess at the heart of it, I'm just a big data college football nerd with far too many spreadsheets.
I mean, it's wonderful stuff that you're producing already, and all of it for free right now, as far as I can tell on your website and everything, which, by the way, you can find his work at baconfield.start.page. All of your stuff will be listed there for people to access. Like you said, your schedule matrix, your player rankings, all of that's there. It's a lot of great stuff, man. And you nailed it on the head, right? Where so many people get started into content creation just by scratching an itch that they feel like nobody else is scratching, right? And I think you're doing a fantastic job of that so far. You're a smart guy every time I've interacted with you. So excited to talk to you today about some of this early season CFF ADP going on. I know you have been participating in about as many drafts as I have. You actually might be into more of these drafts than I am, because I believe it or not, people, I actually do try to limit myself a little bit when it comes to getting involved with these drafts. I don't have all the time in the world, unfortunately, to draft all the time. But Elliot, I know you've been in a ton of these drafts and everything, so let's kind of go ahead and throw up here a little graphic I have that shows some of the early season ADP here, the top 24 at each position. And what you guys can see if you're watching this on YouTube is that it's kind of color coded, and those colors usually indicate what round range you can expect those players to go in. So like the blue players are people that are taken in the first, second round. Green players are your third, fourth rounders. Yellow players are your fifth, sixth rounders. Orange, so on and so forth, right? So I guess we'll take a couple minutes here to kind of talk about just kind of the general trends we're seeing, especially early on in drafts here, Elliot. And the thing that really sticks out to me is the absolute dominance that running back and wide receiver have in this year's early portions of drafts, right? I mentioned earlier that blue players are typically players that are taken in the first two rounds. 15 running backs are labeled as blue on this graphic here, versus only five wide receivers, three quarterbacks, zero tight ends, right? Running backs dominating, but then wide receivers really dominate those next two tiers, right? On this graphic, you can only see among the top 24 running backs and wide receivers, players that are being taken in, rounds one through six. Meanwhile, quarterbacks, you see players that are being taken all the way to round 10. Tight ends, they're a complete afterthought this year. So, kind of, are you seeing that in your drafts, Elliot? Or is that the kind of takeaway you see from this graphic here? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, in the drafts that I've done, it's pretty much been all running backs. I mean, you'll see once in a while, like Jeremiah Smith and Jordan Tyson will go off in that first round, Ryan Williams kind of towards the end of the first round. But for the most part, like people are just stockpiling running backs. And I think that's just due to the kind of, I guess they're pretty thin this year. Let's put it that way. They're not as strong coming into this year as they have been. So I think people are just really trying to get some of those known producers early, because they can feel like they can find some value in the quarterback and the wide receiver position later on.
No, I definitely would agree with you there. Again, it gets so messy, and we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get to some of the players that like the individual players we talk about. But one of my points was when I was picking among running backs that I feel like were going too high, I really zeroed in on that kind of second tier of running backs, right after, your LJ Henderson's, your Demond Claiborne's, your Anthony Hankerson's. Like after those guys, it feels like it gets so messy so quickly, and you are having to take shots on guys that you believe in spots that you know are good, right? Like, again, just looking at this graphic, guys that come to mind there, right? Ahmad Hardy, Quinton Joyner, Caden Durham, Nate Frazier, like Chip Treyunham, Antoine Raymond. Like, it gets so messy so quickly. You don't feel good about any of those guys. And that explains why running backs are going off the board so early. But my thought process is, like, when I was picking among those guys to talk about who's going too early, I almost had the thought of, like, is it really fair to say any of those guys are being taken too early when there's just so much unknown after a certain point? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's guys that, like, when I'm doing these drafts that I like have queued up, and I don't want to pick them, but I'm like, yeah, if I don't though, if I'm on the turn or something like that, it's going to be a long way to come back to me, and there's probably not going to be anything any better. So, I kind of feel the same way. There's a lot of what ifs in the running back position, even at the top, and that puts us into a position where at least in the best ball arena, it's going to be kind of all over the map. You kind of have to spread things out, I think. I really don't think you want to put all your eggs in one basket right now, because it might come back and bite you.
I say, looking at my 100% share of Eric McAllister on my best ball teams here and everything. What are the things kind of stand out to you, Elliot, like when you look at this graphic?
I'm really, really, I guess I feel pretty good about the quarterback, running back, and tight end position, but the wide receiver, the wide receivers are the ones that I'm probably spending the most time just kind of analyzing, or at least overanalyzing. And just because even at the top, we've got guys, that are talented, but we don't necessarily know what their teams are going to look like. We've got guys, like Mosley at Stanford. Stanford is not going to be a top tier team. Deion Burks at Oklahoma, is their offensive line going to be any better? Is Mateer going to be, you would like to think, oh, they can't be much worse, to be honest, but you'd like to think that there'd be some improvement there. Chase Sowell moving to Iowa State. In theory, it sounds great. I've taken quite a few shares of him, but you never know. I think you're pretty safe with McAllister. I think he's probably one of the safer picks there. And you got same system, same quarterback, and a proven producer there, so I wouldn't be too worried about him. But even the guys at the top, like I've yet to take one Jeremiah Smith share. Obviously he's talented, but we got a new quarterback coming in and Julian Sain, and I'm sure he can get him the ball, and I'm sure Ohio State's going to produce, but confidence level is still not there for consistency, which is something that I put a big emphasis on when I'm drafting.
So it's funny, and like I was kind of in the same boat as you among about Jeremiah Smith, where I'm like, okay, yeah, like among wide receivers, he clearly feels like the safest option. But then I started plugging in some back of the napkin projections that I just kind of have on my ranking sheet and everything, and kind of taking a look at like what that outside position at Ohio State's been able to do the last 2 years, like what Jeremiah Smith obviously was able to do last year, and I kind of bumped up his targets a little bit because he had 95 in the regular season last year, right? And I'm like, okay, well, without Egbuka there, I have to imagine that in year two, they're going to bump him up a little bit. So I put him at 110, which is what Marvin Harrison Jr. was getting during his time at Ohio State. And boy, the projections coming back are pretty crazy. Like, you're talking 1,300 yards, 13 touchdowns, which is well above anybody else I have on my like projections here. So like, I'm kind of now at the point where I'm like, yeah, no, I think Jeremiah Smith's 100% worth the first round pick. So, because
I get
again,
it. I get it.
even among the safe options, it's just like there's a different tier there. Tight ends, man. We don't see the first tight end come off the board until an ADP of 106. So you're talking like, eighth, ninth round there on average. Like, do you think we'll eventually get to a point this year where maybe some guys start to creep up into the, early tier range we've seen in the past couple of years, where a guy we feel really good about comes off in like the fifth, sixth round, or do you think they stay down?
No, I mean, the earliest I expect any tight ends to come off is probably around seven, and I really, most of the best balls, at least, I expect them to start around round 10. But I don't see any. I mean, there's somebody who's going to pop off. I mean,
Oh,
there
for
always
sure.
is. It's just a matter of who, and I don't think that's going to really become clear until it happens. I don't think anyone's going to all of a sudden make a name for themselves in spring camp or even in fall camp and all of a sudden be the guy. We just don't really have, I think, I think Chris Kay and Andrew P. Katz, they've been doing a lot of analysis on tight ends, as well as Ethan Sowers when on the Ballin' with Besties podcast, and regarding kind of the athletic tight end. And I think that if you're going to take shots on anybody that are not, your proven producers, I think that, your athletic guys that might do more than you expect. Like, I know a lot of guys are high on Sadiq right now,
Yeah, I was like, Kenyon Sadiq
and
comes to mind.
he's kind of the epitome of that. And as you can see by the ADP, he's going off as tight end too.
Yeah, other guys that kind of come to mind there are guys like, Tre'Davious Green, who's a dual sport athlete there. Dorian Fleming, I think, also matches that as well, right? You wanted to target some guys that are probably, more receiver than they are necessarily tight end. They just happen to be really, really big. So, because let's
For
be real,
sure.
we don't get points per block in CFF. So, all right. With that being said, man, we're gonna jump into it. We both dove into the ADP and we've identified some guys that we think early on in these drafts are going too high and too low. We've each brought three players that are going too high, too low, and ironically, we have one of each position: quarterback, running back, wide receiver. I don't think either one of us wanted to really dive into tight end because, it just feels like a mess already. So why reiterate that over and over again? So yeah, we'll go ahead and get started here, and we'll throw my quarterback that I think is going too high here, and I am going to take aim at a guy that I really do like. Like, let me be clear, I like this guy, but Micah Alejandro strikes me as a guy that's going way too high in draft so far, right? Like, don't get me wrong, I'm excited to see what he can do for this run and shoot system. I, just like everybody else, want to see Hawaii return to their glory days. And I do think that Braydon Shaker was a huge part in holding this team back for the last couple of years. However, I do also think that it is a big assumption to say that Braydon Shaker has been the only problem, right? Like, let's take a look at some other potential issues here. One, what if it's Timmy Chang, right? He's had 3 years to get this system off the ground. It hasn't come close to those old glory days of Hawaii, right? He could have gotten a portal quarterback out of the portal. Like, you're telling me there's nobody in the portal that wanted to come to and live on Hawaii for a couple of years to play football, really? What if it's the receivers, right? Like, just look this past year. Pafele Ashlock had a drop rate of 17.6% of his targets. That means one out of every six targets that came his way, he dropped it. Not incomplete, just straight up dropped. Jonah Pinoke was 10% drop rate. Alex Perry is 15.4%, right? They couldn't catch the ball, and none of them had a contested catch rate over 40%. So receivers have been a problem the last couple of years. And quite frankly, like, they're not looking like they're going to get any better. They didn't really grab guys out of the portal. Now, side note, Nick Senekal, if you want some Nick Senekal hype here, he broke trend with all those guys, right? He only had a 6% drop rate. He had 40+% contested catch rate. So he seems like a guy that Hawaii can actually rely on this year. But anyway, coming back to Alejandro, right? I don't necessarily think it's just the quarterback situation needs to be solved here, right? But Jared, you might say, he and the offense looked so good in their last game of the season, right? I agree. Look at the stats. 57 pass attempts, 469 yards, five touchdowns in through the air, and then 54 yards on the ground. Like, Alejandro was a top three quarterback in that last week for CFF. So one, if you rolled the dice on that in your championship week, congratulations to you. But we also need to remember who their opponent was, and that was New Mexico. They're 131st in total defense for the whole year. It was New Mexico's last game of the season. They weren't going bowling. Half the team and the staff had their foot out the door already with new contracts, new portal destinations, and stuff like that. I don't think they really cared in that game. All this to say, like, I like Alejandro. I like the upside, given what I saw in that last game here. But putting him at QB6 in ADP right now, when there's so many known pieces at quarterback, it doesn't feel like a very good pick in, that round 5-6 range when there's other positions, as we discussed, Elliot. Like, running back and wide receiver, they're flying off the board in that range. I don't think Alejandro's really worth reaching up and grabbing as a early quarterback compared to even some of the other quarterbacks in that range. So Am I crazy, Elliot? What do you think?
I don't think you're crazy, but having said that, I have him ranked in my rankings as my quarterback four. Now, keep in mind, I have my rankings based off 6-point passing touchdowns, so he
Fair
certainly
point.
would be much lower. If I was doing 4-point, I'd probably have him closer to like 12 to 15.
I have him as
But
QB
that's still pretty
14.
optim. Yeah, I was gonna say that's still pretty optimistic, I think. I think there's reason to doubt for sure. I mean, I had tons of Ashlock shares last year, and they didn't really pan out so well. And I hate to say it, but yes, Schrager was a big part of that. But something's not right, and until I know what that is, I'm probably not going to be heavily invested in any of the Hawaii players.
Yeah, no, it is definitely heartbreaking because like I want to see it. Like we got that teaser in that game against New Mexico of like they clearly can do it. Why did it take so long? If it really was just making that switch from Braden Shager to Mike Alahato, like that's an indictment on Timmy Chang that change wasn't made earlier in the season, right? So yeah, again, I have Alahato as my QB14. And like you said, I feel like that's being generous. That is like projecting that upside right there. But like going as high as QB6 just and it's less even that QB like if QB6 was going off in like round 7, 8, like and QBs are just being pushed down that far, I'd be more okay with it. But just like in that critical range where you're trying to hit those skill positions early, I just think it's not really worth zagging when others are zigging there. What about you, Elliot? Which quarterback do you think is currently going too high in drafts?
Yeah, so my quarterback that I think is just a little bit overvalued right now is Keelon Russell, quarterback out of Alabama. He's currently going as quarterback 79 and as 269th, I think, ADP.
I actually, sorry, I meant I didn't, I
Oof.
meant to say it on the show
You
sheet, but.
updated some things.
Yes, I caught that I didn't replace him as a placeholder in another draft. So he's now actually QB 73, and his ADP is actually different. Even it's lower. I don't know. Something might be up with my sheet there with his calculation because his ADP is lower, but his ranking's higher. But
Yeah,
anyway,
so
QB 73 off the board.
either way, I think he's a little bit overvalued right now. I understand the desire to handcuff some of these position battles, but I don't think that this one is one that's necessary. And if it is, it's probably better to target Austin Mack along with an early pick of Ty Simpson. Reports out of spring camp have been kind of explicitly mentioning both Ty Simpson and Austin Mack, especially Austin Mack. They've been speaking very highly of him. And they've kind of used words for Russell like, being the future and a factor in the room. And that verbiage just does not sound to me like he's leading the charge by any means. I feel like he'll probably use this year to hit the gym, put on some weight, refine his skills and kind of knowledge of the offense before taking over next year. I think he put on somewhere around 20 pounds since he graduated, but he's still, like 190 pounds and he's at 6'3". So he has some room to grow there for sure. And I think we can also learn a lot from previous players. Milroe mentioned at his pro day that, something along the lines of the opportunities there for Russell to learn, as he once did from returners in the room. And I think that says a lot, kind of how the pecking order is viewed currently kind of internally. He's looking at Russell as more of somebody who's got a lot to learn, just like he did, from the veterans in the room. So I also think that just as a community, we often get kind of attached to shiny new toys and up and coming talent, and then that excitement then leads to artificially kind of elevate our view. And there's tons of players that we can look at in the past that have been kind of in that same boat, like Malachi Nelson. And I think that Keelon's probably the future. I just feel like right now it's a little too early for him. The counter argument there, he's obviously talented. He's the highest ranked recruit of anyone on Alabama's team. And injuries happen. I'm sure whoever gets the nod to start this year, which I believe is going to be Ty Simpson, is also going to be probably on a fairly short leash with all the talent that they've got right behind them.
No, I mean, I fully agree here. And I especially agree with the fact that we as a community do need to be careful about these shiny new toys, right? And to me, it goes not only just for freshmen, but like transfers as well, right? Like I do think that we undervalue a lot of times, like the guys that are already there. We undervalue how much having a full year under your belt, especially if it's the same system, same coaching staff, right? Like, it's a totally different scenario, right? If it's like a new offensive coordinator coming in and a new transfer coming in, because then there's the opportunity for both the guys that are there and the new guys coming in to be all on the same page, right? But this is Kalen DeBoer's system, right? Yes, Ryan Grubb was out for a year. He's back and everything, but they ran the same type of system, right? It's just that Ryan Grubb can run it better than Nick Sheridan can. And so I do agree with you that Ty Simpson and Austin Mack both have a leg up on Russell. And if you're going to handcuff, you might as well go Simpson and Mack rather than trying to throw Russell in here. What about Simpson? He's another one that I kind of was, he was somebody I was considering to put as going too low in drafts right now until you had put Russell as your too high guy. So I'm like, okay, I don't want to double dip at Alabama yeah, quarterback kinda, here, but Ty Simpson, QB 60. Like, these two are going, you know, 13 spots apart in terms of, you know, quarterback ranking, right? I think that's kind of crazy that Simpson's not a bit further up. And then maybe if you're concerned, you take the shot on, you know, Russell or Mack later on as like your last two picks. Like, should Simpson be going higher, you think?
Yeah, I mean, like, I kind of cheated on this one with a overvalued slash undervalued player tied to him. You know, I think that I've got Simpson ranked 46, and I think that if we knew for sure, you know, who that quarterback and that position was going to be, they'd probably be closer to, you know, high 30s in most people's rankings.
I got him there already. I got him as QB 34.
Yeah, so I think that's a pretty good spot to have him ranked, and you know, I'm pretty confident on this one. I'm pretty confident Ty Simpson's going to get the nod to start the year. Now, I can't promise anyone that he's going to be finishing there, but you can't do that with any quarterback, really. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. Ty Simpson's probably going too low. Keelan Russell's going too early. And I think most of that kind of that narrow difference between the two is coming just because guys are handcuffing them one round right after another.
I think also what people need to remember is that Jalen Milroe, despite all of his problems last year, still finishes QB4 in total points last year, right? Like, Kalen DeBoer can work magic. And Ty Simpson, yeah, we have questions about his ability to throw the ball. I don't think it's nearly to the degree that we had about Jalen Milroe, but he also has legs. Simpson can run, right? So at worst, I think, like, if he doesn't perform well passing, like, they just kind of switch back to a system that made Milroe do so well at times last year. So let's move on to my running back that I think is going too high right now. And like I said earlier, when we were discussing just the kind of general trends and everything like that, this just kind of felt weird picking a running back going too high because of that steep drop off so early on in drafts that, like, there's so many guys I could talk about here. Right? As I mentioned, Quentin Joyner, Caden Durham, Nate Frazier, Chip Traynham, Ahmad Hardy, Cedric Baxter, like, all those guys feel icky to me in that range very quickly, but because of the state of the running backs right now, you have to take your shots. But one guy that I do think that very much encapsulates what I was talking about earlier with regards to, like, shiny new toys, especially transfers, is Kanye Udo, the running back out of, well, formerly of Army, now at Arizona State. I think this is absolutely a crystal clear case of us just falling in love with a new toy and not really giving the guy that is already there enough credit, right? One, I will fully admit, when Udo first transferred to Arizona State, I was intrigued like everybody else. Like, dude is a 1,000-yard back at Army, a system known for splitting touches to the point where nobody's really valuable. Udo was great last year, 1,000 yards or 1,100 yards, 10 touchdowns. No receiving work. We'll get to that in a second. But I think it's a mistake that there's a couple of mistakes I think people are making here. One, I think it's a mistake to think that there will be guaranteed a clear-cut bell cow at Arizona State this year, right? Look at Kenny Dillingham's history the last couple of years, and you'll notice that Scattabo will be the only true bell cow you'll find, right? Like, 2023, 2024, Scattabo had 47% and 51% rushing share, 8.1% target share, 13.5% target share each of his 2 years there, right? Then go back just a year before, to Bucky Irving, 30% rushing share. DeShaun Corbin in 2021, 34.5% rushing share. 2020, Corbin only had 25.7% rushing share. Like, in the past, Dillingham has gone for a committee approach, and usually it takes a special talent to kind of break that, like we saw with Scataboo. And even then, like, Scataboo didn't really take off until this past year, where they realized just running the ball was the best thing they could possibly do. Even Bucky Irving, who's an NFL back now, couldn't even break Dillingham out of his mold, right? I don't think there's anything about Udo that screams he's somebody who's able to do that, right? Not only that, Udo would also need to sideline the guys that are already on campus, specifically Kyson Brown. Kyson Brown was a very good understudy to Cameron Scataboo last year, right? 73 carries, 351 yards, averaging almost 5 yards a carry and 2 touchdowns. And even more importantly, in my mind, he was great catching the ball. 13 catches, 189 yards, 14.5 yards per reception, and a touchdown there. As far as I can tell, Kyson, if you're going to target a guy to be a number one guy in Kenny Dillingham's offense, Kyson to me seems like he has the skill set more to be that number one guy, right? One, he has the experience. He has the year in that system under his belt. He's got that receiving work that Udo, to be kind, lacks greatly. I think he's had, like, I can't remember what Kay said in the chat. I think he's had five receptions between high school and college so far. So to me, if you're going to target a running back for this offense, go for Kyson Brown at RB 95 in the 24th round over Udo here in, you know, the fifth round, RB 26. Like, I think at worst, this is a 50-50 shot between Brown and Udo. And I'm saying, like, Udo's going way too high for a situation like that. What do you think, Elliot? I've been rambling on a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think Udo is definitely going too high. I mean, I am a fan of his, though, and I, as much as, you know, we could obviously look at the stats and just say, like, okay, well, obviously he's not a receiving threat, but I would caution people to that a little bit, just in regards to the fact that I think that had mostly to do with the fact that it wasn't necessary for him to catch passes, and the systems that he was in was, you know, they didn't throw the ball to the running back. So I think that he's probably capable, but we just, once again, that level of uncertainty automatically drops his value down a little bit. And, you know, I agree. You were talking about kind of the share, like, Scataboo just was a different beast. And honestly, why wouldn't you use him as much as you did? So I think Udo and Brown are probably going to look close, like you said. I think 50-50, maybe even more distribution than that with some of the other backs. So, you know, Udo's, I think he's still should be going first, but just not as high as he's going currently.
Yeah, I think the gap to me is what really stands out between those guys. Again, like, Udo going in the fifth round, Kyson Brown going in the 24th round. Like, I will take the shot on Udo every single time. And I think there's other backs that this applies to, right? Like, Quentin Joyner, I'm in the opposite camp when it comes to the Texas Tech running back situation, right? Where I'm like, I love Quentin Joyner. I'm okay with drafting Quentin Joyner, but Jacoby Williams is there, and he looked pretty good to end the year last year. So, like, I don't blame people for taking a shot on Jacoby Williams when he's going, like, last five rounds of a 30-round draft. So, what about you, Elliot? You got a running back here that you think is going too high. What do you got, man?
Yeah, so I've got Fluff Bothwell, running back, transferred into Mississippi State. Currently, I believe he is RB 53 and as an ADP of 120. I've got him ranked around 80th in my rankings. And, you know, I think Fluff had a great year with some really high numbers on limited touches at South Alabama. But I think that, you know, round 10 is just a little too early. And I've seen him go as early as like the seventh round or more recently. So I think a lot of folks probably think that Fluff's just coming in here and that this is his room for the taking, but he's still going to have to go in and compete with Devon Booth. And Booth's coming back from, I mean, two respectable years at Mississippi State, Utah State before that. But I just don't see Fluff coming in as a sophomore and just completely fully unseating him. But I think it's probably more likely that, you know, he'll still get touches, but it might be more of a committee approach with the two of them. And additionally, if you sort my schedule matrix, by defensive SP plus metrics, Mississippi State has one of the has like one of the most difficult schedules out there. They got the fourth most difficult schedule, which, just in general doesn't bode well for running backs. And again, much we're gonna talk about it a little bit later, but as a player moving up in competition after a transfer, I'm just skeptical, especially moving into the SEC. I mean, in 2024, there were zero running backs that transferred up in competition that finished in the top 30 in points per game. And I just don't see him bucking that trend. He's got too much going against him.
No, I mean, I think that's a great point there, and like I've been trying to sound that alarm, especially on wide receivers, and like you said, like we'll kind of get to that here in a second, but like wide receivers that move up in competition, it is so dang rare to find them right now. I will ask you, in 2024, there's one, well, actually no top 30 in points per game. What did Desmond Reed finish as? Because like technically he moved up in competition, but like that's like a unicorn scenario,
Yeah.
right? But like I'm just curious. Let's see. He finished as RB16. So technically
Yeah.
we have one that moved, but like I said, that was a unicorn scenario. He followed his offensive coordinator. He's a very specific skill set, and there was hardly anybody else in that offense that was really doing anything, right? Now, you can maybe say the same for Mississippi State, because my concern with Mississippi State is that I have no clue really what to expect from Mississippi State this year. Or I do know what to expect. I don't expect them to be very good. And that could be a really good thing for a guy like Fluff Bothwell, who, is an explosive guy. It could turn into a Desmond Reed kind of situation where he's pretty solid out of the backfield. He could end up getting multiple targets per game if he does kind of show himself early on to be one of the guys they can rely on. Problem is, it may not matter at all in the SEC, like you kind of mentioned. So I fully agree with you. I got his partner in crime, Devon Booth, as my RB65, because he had, like you said, he had a pretty respectable finish last year. I don't think Mississippi State's going to take a super senior that's fought his way to come back for one more year with the Pavia ruling. They're not going to sideline him for anything, especially in a year where who knows if Jeff Lebby even makes it through and everything. So I agree with you. I don't have both well in my rankings at all right now. I granted my RB rankings don't go that deep right now, but even so, like I wouldn't expect to see him in my rankings until probably easily RB 85, 90 plus. So let's hit on a wide receiver here that I think is going too high. And it's funny because I think last year we had tabbed Emeka Ebuka in this episode in 2024 as a guy that was going too high. Well, I'm going to go back to the well. I'm going to hit another Ohio State wide receiver here that I think is just going too high. And very similar to Micah Alejandro, I think he's great talent. I think Carnell Tate is a great talent. I just realized I never said the name. Carnell Tate, wide receiver at Ohio State, is going too high right now. He's wide receiver 18 in ADP. He's being picked at the beginning of the sixth round on average. Like I said, I think he's a great talent. I was advocating for him last year. I thought people were being way too dismissive of him last year when we were hyping up Jeremiah Smith. Granted, the Jeremiah Smith hype train turned out to be right, but like, just to let you guys know, like I have no personal angst towards Carnell Tate here. Or Tate, excuse me. Oops. All that being said, like I said, my eyes bugged out of my head when I put this ADP together and I saw him as the wide receiver 18 in drafts right now. I think we can all agree Jeremiah Smith's the number one guy for Ohio State this year, right? Like, so put that to the side. Let's take a look at the Ohio State wide receiver twos the last couple of years. Emeka Egbuka was the number two guy in all three of the last 3 years. 81 targets, 69 targets, 70 or 97 targets. By the 2023 targets are extrapolated to 12 games because Egbuka only played 9 games. You're looking at 60, 47, and 66 catches, 743, 601, 1,039 yards, and then 9 touchdowns, 5 touchdowns, 9 touchdowns. But oops, I can't look at Ibuka's stats because he plays in the slot, right? And Tate is definitively on the other outside position there for Ohio State. So let's take a look at what the second outside receiver Ohio State has averaged the last 3 years, or last 4 years, excuse me, because I did want to include Chris Olave's final season in here just to show that I'm not trying to cherry pick here. But The second outside wide receiver of Ohio State the last 4 years has averaged 59 targets, 41 catches, 567 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Now, I do think that Tate can finish above that this year. But as we've kind of seen with Ohio State, the volume isn't quite there to truly elevate two wide receivers like they were able to back during the days of, like, you know, when Justin Fields and CJ Stroud were the quarterbacks, right? Maybe they do lean more towards the pass this year with Judkins and Henderson gone, right? Maybe they have to rely on Tate more because Brandon Innes is such a big downgrade from Egbuka in the slot. I don't know, but all of this kind of feels like a very bad bet, in my opinion, to make this early on in drafts, especially for a guy that you're taking as your wide receiver one or two on your team. Like, kind of similar to Kyson Brown, like, you can take Tate at wide receiver 18, or if you want to take a shot at Ohio State's wide receiver two, I say you might as well just take a shot on Brandon Innes, who's playing in that historic spot for the wide receiver two under Ryan Day, the slot position, much later in drafts. He's being taken as wide receiver 83 in the round 23 range. So, Elliot, Carnell Tate, what are your thoughts, man?
I mean, I'm definitely on board. I've currently got him ranked 36th in my rankings. So, you know, I think that for me, it has less to do with Jeremiah Smith than it does, because I think the shares are going to be there, especially if you look at, I think, you know, I haven't actually looked at it, but if you look at him kind of coming down the stretch, there were some games, even in the playoffs, yeah, like Texas, he had 9 targets. Against Michigan, he had 10. You know, they started throwing in the ball more when they needed to do that, you know? And so I think it really depends on how Ohio State plays this year, you know? And you've got, you know, Sain coming in, and we'll see how he can, you know, change things up offensively compared to Howard. But, you know, I agree that he's definitely going too high. Wide receiver 18 just doesn't make any sense to me.
I agree. I got him much lower. I got him at wide receiver 65. Maybe that's a little too harsh, but like when I'm looking at a position that's averaged 59 targets and I'm still, you know, being generous in my opinion, kind of giving him like 75 targets, right? Like you got a decent year here, 820 yards and, you know, 7-8 touchdowns, right? But like that's not somebody I want to take as my wide receiver 1 or 2. That's somebody I want to take as like my wide receiver 3-4 and then plug into my lineup if, God forbid, something happened to Jeremiah Smith and Tate becomes an absolute monster down the stretch because he's now in that coveted outside wide receiver 1 role for Ohio State. So, all right, Elliot, who's your wide receiver that you think is being taken too high?
So I've got Devontae Ross, wide receiver out of Penn State, currently going as wide receiver 51 with an ADP of 168. You know, I've got him ranked 70th, which I think is even being quite frankly generous. but I think that wide receiver 51 is just way, way too high. I've seen Roscoe as early as round 9. And while I love his talent and what he did last year at Troy, it's just, that's far too early. You know, Ross is transferring up from Troy to Penn State, and as you and I talked about, transfers, especially in the wide receiver position, just historically have not fared well at all. And this is even more problematic when transferring up in competition, which This is a huge, huge difference in competition. And add on the fact that he's transferring to a team in Penn State that, you know, they target their tight ends more than they do their receivers. So, you know, Penn State only had one receiver that averaged over 5 points per game last year, and that was Terrison Wallace, and he was still under 10 points per game at the end of the year. And so, and you can, you know, case in point, Dante Cephas, you know, came in from Kent after 2 consecutive great years and went and played at Penn State and ended up with 22 receptions for 136 yards and 2 touchdowns. So, you know, I just don't see it happening. I'd love for him to have success there, but, you know, I think that another issue he's going to run into is his size. You know, he's going to have to put on some weight. He's 5'11 and 161 pounds. And taking that into the Big Ten, it's going to be tough for him, you know, despite being a good route runner and having good hands and good speed. Like, it's going to be tough. And I mean, you could argue, like, I know some Penn State fans, and they seem to think every year is going to be the year. And you know what? They could unlock their offense, and Alar might, you know, start slinging it. But I think that just with the success they've had in the past and the expectations running high for them in 25, because they will be a contender, they will be a good team. I just doubt they changed their game plan. You got Singleton and Allen, and they're just going to pound the rock. They're going to pound the rock, and they're going to throw when necessary. They're going to utilize their tight ends, and they're going to win in the trenches. They're going to win ball games with defense and not making mistakes.
I mean, what's more toxic to you, Elliot? A Penn State wide receiver or a Georgia wide receiver?
I mean, definitely a Penn State wide receiver. I mean, I hate to say it, George, that's a tight race, but Georgia wide receivers at least, have their games. Like Penn State's are non-existent.
And we haven't seen anything really since the days of Jahan Dotson, right? And that was like obviously a, end up being a first round pick at the wide receiver position. And again, I think you mentioned it already, but like Ross, in addition to all of these other things going against him, like he's tiny. He's 5'11", 161, right? Like that's not going to translate very well going up into the Big Ten. Like I fear for his safety a little bit, if I'm being honest. I don't have Ross ranked at all in my wide receivers. I have 72 wide receivers ranked. And here's the thing. I even if I expanded this another 24 wide receivers, I still don't think I would get him in there, because you can't trust a Penn State wide receiver any more than you can trust like a Georgia wide receiver right now. By the way, I just want to throw out there that I've come around to the idea that my Tate initial ranking at wide receiver 65 was a little too harsh. I bumped him up to wide receiver 46.
There we go.
Because I was like, maybe I'm being a little too harsh here. Because he is, like I said, he is extremely talented. And like with how messy wide receivers get later on, like I'm like, I can bet on talent over most of these guys. So he moved up quite a bit, but still not wide receiver 18, as drafts would have you believe. So, all right, Elliot, we have talked down enough guys here. Let's talk about some guys that we think are going too late in drafts right now that are, we just think are not getting enough love right now. So, same deal. We each brought three, one at each position. So I'll start with my quarterback here and my guy that I think is getting going too low in early ADP for the quarterback position is Eli Holsting, quarterback out of Pittsburgh. Now, this is kind of like the opposite of the running back situation, where it felt weird to say any running back was going too high because of just how messy things got. This is like the opposite, where quarterback, it feels weird to say any of these quarterbacks are going too late just because of how deep the position is, right? Like when I look at the guys going around Holstein, I'm like, no, those are pretty good guys. It's not like it's insane to me that he's going this low. But to me, Holstein stands out in that range because of just the insane heater this guy was on last year to start the season, right? If you took, fantasy points per game and how it changes week by week, Holstein was still a top 12 quarterback in fantasy points per game through 9 weeks. His first 5 weeks were absolutely insane. 25, 28, 30, 43, 41 points. That was his first 5 games of the year. And then the perfect storm hit, right? You get one bad game in a low scoring match versus Cal. That's fine. We can overlook that, right? But then the blowout victory comes over Syracuse, where Holstein couldn't hardly do anything because Kyle McCord was throwing picks in a meltdown that would have made Chernobyl blush, right? Then after that, Holstein in his remaining games just couldn't buy a touchdown to save his life, right? In his first 5 games, Holstein had 18 touchdowns. In his last five, he had two. Like, so just in some insane touchdown luck, just not going Holstein's way from then on out. Add in the fact that Holstein got injured both in the Virginia game and then when he tried to come back in the Louisville game, got injured again. Like, no wonder this dude's season fell apart. But now, this year, we have a chance to return to that early season glory, right? Cade Bell, the offensive coordinator, is back. Desmond Reed's back. A good chunk of the O-line returns. Last time I checked, Pitt's still in the ACC, where defense as of late has been optional. Right? The only thing that really concerns me is that they are missing Konate Mumfield. He's not back, so they'll need to find somebody at receiver to kind of help them out a little bit. But Holstein, among all these quarterbacks that are going in this range, right? Like this QB, 35, 40 range, like the upside's absolutely incredible for him, and he's more proven than a lot of the guys that are kind of going in this range, at least in his current situation, right? Like, yeah, I can see how people like Salter, Castellanos, and Byron Brown, and Talon Green and stuff like that, but Holstein was on fire last year, like a true league-winning quarterback before things fell apart for him in Pittsburgh. I think this year, with everybody with another year under their belts, Pittsburgh can kind of keep that going further on in the year, and I think it makes him a fantastic value at QB 41. What do you think, Elliot?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think he's a bargain currently where he's at. I've got him ranked 35th. And if I was confident, so I'm going to wait a little bit longer to bump him up. I probably will if reports out of spring keep going the way they're going. He'll probably end up in the low 20s, maybe around 20 for me. If he could compete at the level, like you said, that he started the year with before his ankle issue, he's absolutely probably a top 10 quarterback. But I'm still waiting to hear and see him, you know, using that ankle, because my biggest concern with him is not so much the, you know, him starting or the passing game or anything like that. I just want to see him use his legs a little more, because, you know, he is a big rushing threat, or a decent rushing threat, I should say, not really a big rushing threat. But, you know, if you look at his games last year, I mean, after that injury, it got pretty, like, his rushing attempts went from, you know, 10 to 15 to 2. And his touchdowns were non-existent. So, you know, he needs to get his feet back under him and start, you know, being able to become a little more of a dual threat. And that'll only help Pitt out too. I mean, obviously bringing Desmond Reed back, Reed is a phenomenal running back and in his own right, but having that kind of dual threat ability will open things up and just give him more opportunity to put up fantasy points. So,
yeah, again, to me, it is just the fact that, again, you're talking about a guy that was averaging over 30 fantasy points per game. Like, you're not finding many quarterbacks in that range. Now, again, you can take shots on guys like Castellanos, Matthew Sluka, you know, Haas Haney, like, that could provide that upside. But with Holstein, you've actually seen it done before. It's just, like you said, it's just a matter of, do you trust him to come back from that injury? What about you, Elliot? What's a quarterback that you think is going too low in ADP right now?
Yeah, so my undervalued quarterback is Owen McGowan, quarterback at UTSA, who's currently at QB 15 and an ADP of 94. You know, he's obviously still going pretty high. He's going early in drafts, but I think he could go even earlier come this fall. You know, his ADP went from QB 19 to QB 15 over the last 2 months, and I continue to see that drop a little bit, and expect him to kind of level off around 10 or 11. You know, his points per game were a little bit misleading last year. You know, if you ignored his earlier games against Texas and Texas State, his points per game would have put him just outside the top 10. You know, he's nearly got all of his receivers back, including McEwen and Amador, who are both, you know, obviously going early in drafts as well. UTSA is in the top 10 of offensive returning production as well at 77%. And then they were also second last year in plays per game, averaging 76 plays per game. So they're going to move the ball. They also rank third in what I'm dubbing FP plus, which is basically kind of a team fantasy production potential. And it's basically a team metric based on a weighted combination of Bill Conley's SP plus numbers. And it could simply just be boiled down to kind of teams that have good offenses and bad defenses. You know, i.e. New Mexico last year was a perfect storm for that. Their defense was terrible. They were always playing catch up and obviously had some good offensive production because of that. Now, I don't think UTSA is as bad defensively as New Mexico is, but I do think their offense is better. So I do think that McCallum's going to be able to perform there. He did get a little bit turnover happy in the second half of the year with some interceptions in the last, you know, five or six games, as well as a couple fumbles. But, you know, I'm optimistic he gets things cleared up and gets things cleaned up and just gets back to scoring fantasy points.
I mean, you're 100% right that McCowan has everything you really need here to be a phenomenal CFF quarterback, right? Dual threat, has great receivers around him in a system that we like there at UTSA, right? He gets a ton of his guys back. He plays in the AAC where, you know, there's been plenty of shootout potential there in the past. I was going to bring up, you kind of touched on a little bit that some of his fantasy points and stuff like that are a little misleading, because I was going to bring up the fact that McCallum was QB 24 in total points last year, but he was QB 37 in fantasy points per game. But you kind of touched on a lot of that comes from some of those early season matchups where you weren't really planning on starting him against those teams anyway. He's much more valuable for once he gets into conference play there. So good job beating me to the punch on that counter argument there. So I just want to say, I find it really hilarious that normally when you do a segment like this, like, it's like if you, it's like guys are going too early, you pick a guy that's like going really, really early. And it's like guys that are going too low, you pick a guy that's going really, 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 really low. And you're like, oh, they should come up. You did the opposite where you're like, I'm going to pick a quarterback that's already going really high and he should be going even higher. And then yeah. I'm going to pick a quarterback that is going pretty low already, and I think he should just drop off the face of the planet. So I don't know. That just gave me a little kick, because I was just like, that's one way to do it. And I like it. Just, we're going to send McCallum to the moon here with his value. Now, I like McCallum a lot. There's a perfect storm kind of building there. I have him, let's see, where do I got you? I have him as QB 15. So like I very much like the potential there. So we'll talk about my running back here that I think is going too low. And initially I was going to do my boy Yaseen Willis, but there was another guy that kind of stuck out to me a little bit more as I kind of dug deeper into it, and that is Mr. Darian Dupree, the running back out of Wisconsin. Obviously, Wisconsin's RB1s have long been a staple of CFF through multiple coaching changes. It feels like they're never going to take away the RB1 of Wisconsin, because I think the fans might riot if they didn't have one clear top guy there. Last couple of years, we've seen Tommy Walker take charge and help teams in CFF teams in the second half of last season. Braylon Allen was obviously very nice. I don't even need to mention, you know, the Paul Chris years and how great those were for Wisconsin RB1s here. Right, but we are now in the midst of another coaching change with Wisconsin. Obviously, Luke Fickell is still around, but Wisconsin's moving on from Phil Longo. Tommy Walker's transferring out of there. There's a lot of unanswered questions here at Wisconsin. Well, I'm going to try to attempt to answer them, and that is with Darian Dupree. I think he's a fantastic value in drafts right now. He was second in carries last year for Wisconsin, toting the rock 79 times and catching it 12 times. His efficiency wasn't great, but I think it's pretty clear the staff puts a lot of stock into him, considering, again, they let him touch the ball 91 times as a true freshman, which is a pretty big gap between him and the rest of that room currently. Wisconsin didn't bring anybody in out of the portal, so that, I have to assume that means, as of now, they're pretty happy with having Dupree being their main guy and the rest of that room, right? That's just Dupree. This doesn't even get into Jeff Grimes as an offensive coordinator. The man named Jeff Grimes has been an absolute monster when it comes to producing CFF running backs over the last 5 years. Just this past year, 2024, Devin Neal, 1,262 yards, 16 touchdowns on the ground, another 266 yards, and a touchdown through the air. In 2022, Richard Reese, not even getting a full season because he was a true freshman, had to make his way up there, 971 yards and 14 touchdowns with 84 yards through the air. Year before that, Abram Smith, 216 attempts for 1,363 yards and 12 touchdowns. Then the year before that, Tyler Algier went on a tear, 960 yards, 12 touchdowns, 114 yards through the air. So in four of the last 5 years, Jeff Grimes has gotten his number one back to double-digit touchdowns and 950-plus yards on the ground. That is something I'm willing to bet on here, especially for a guy like Darian Dupree, who's going in round 18 on average in drafts right now. Like, we talk about how messy running back gets right now. Dupree, I think, is about to shoot up draft boards once people realize, like, he's just kind of sitting there as a, in my opinion, very safe option to grab that late, right, in a system that has been very productive in four of the last 5 years. What do you think, Elliot?
Yeah, actually, I mean, up until I guess it was about a week ago, I had him ranked like 67th. So I had him, you know, fairly close to where he was going. But after our first, I got into the champion series this year, and I saw CFF champs take him in the 10th round, kind of in the early part of the 10th round. And that piqued my interest. And I was looking into it, and I kind of came across the same stuff you did, and I was like, all right, I need to move him up. And so I ended up, bouncing him up. I think I have him somewhere in the 50 range. Yeah, 52 right now. So, I mean, he's definitely on his way up, and I could see myself moving him into the mid to low 40s even, so.
Yeah, I've got him at RB33 right now again, because like once I realized like how safe of a play this was, I think I was willing to move him up a little bit. Now, granted, there's a lot of guys that were going early in drafts that I think I'm lower on than a lot of people, so maybe that kind of bumps him up even further there, right? But I got him in the same range as like Le'Veon Moss, Syer Gaines, Ahmad Hardy, like guys kind of around that. So,
Totally fair.
What about you? Who's a running back that you think is going too late in drafts right now?
So I've got Dylan Carson as being currently undervalued running back at Air Force, RB52 currently at 117th in total ADP. I've got him ranked 29th, and I even think that I could probably bump that up a little bit more. But this is one that I'm pretty confident in. I'd say probably eight out of 10. You know, Carson's one of those guys last year, I think, that a lot of us had high hopes for, but, you know, an injury in week one kind of shut that down. And I think that while we haven't forgotten, I think we are fading him a bit too much. You know, if you look at last year, or well, if you look at 2 years ago, Carson had four games in his debut season in 23, where he had more than 10 carries, and in those games averaged 7.4 yards per carry. And then last year, after getting his health back, he played in the last four games of the year, receiving the volume that we tend to expect from an Air Force back. He ended up getting an average on those four games of 23.5 carries per game and nearly 450 yards and five touchdowns. And if you look at Air Force, they were absolutely dead last in returning production last year at 25%. And this year, coming into the spring, they're returning 68% of their offensive production. It also helps that, you know, Air Force obviously has the second highest rush rate of 82%,
Yep.
you know, second only to Army, which, you know, as a military academy, you kind of expect that. But they also surprisingly have a respectable number of plays per game at 67 as well. So it's not like they're, you know, super slow. I just feel like we're letting him slide way too far. And honestly, in most of the leagues I have him, that or at least all the leagues I can get him in. And my only real concern here would be injury, just because I'm not entirely sure how, you know, obviously the last four games they fed him the rock, so it didn't seem to bother him then, and I don't expect it to continue on into the 2025 season. But that would be my only concern.
You're gonna find no argument from me here. Like, I think when you and I are in a draft together, we're like taking shots at each other in terms of who can get Carson off the board at a reasonable price first. Because like I'm a big fan of Carson as well. Again, another guy that in a year where running back feels so disjointed, so unknown, right? The Air Force Super Back is a place that we can go, and it's not like we're having to fully project here. Like you said, the end of last season, Air Force was kind of getting back on track. Carson was their main guy. I've got Carson as RB19. Right, you got him as RB29. I got him as RB19. Like, I
I'm
think
gonna
he's
have to, I'm
another
gonna have to
guy.
bump them up.
You're gonna say, guess what? We're in two drafts together right now, and I'm if those
Well,
rankings hold.
I've got him at three now. No, I'm just kidding.
Like, that's where I wanted him the whole time. I just didn't want anybody to know. No. Again, you will find no argument from me here. Like, I love Carson. I took shots on him last year, helped out nicely towards the end. But those usually were on best ball teams that were already not doing so hot. So, like, yay, I moved up from sixth place to third place. Woo. But even still, like, yeah, I have no argument here. I love Carson. And it's also funny because you and I have the same thoughts on a lot of players, it seems like. Because I love your wide receiver pick here as well. But speaking of wide receivers, we'll go ahead and knock mine out of the way here. And that is Mr. CJ Daniels, wide receiver out of Miami of Florida. I was kind of going back and forth between if I want to do CJ Daniels or Carlos Hernandez, but I think people have heard me talk about Carlos Hernandez enough times on this show that I figured it was best for us to just move on from that. Let's talk about CJ Daniels, though, wide receiver at Miami of Florida. Florida, currently in ADP, wide receiver 60, going towards the end of the 16th, beginning of the 17th round. This was a man that had a lot of hype going to LSU last year and never really manifested. Now, again, it wasn't a horrible year. You know, 42 touches, 480 yards. So it's not like Daniels did absolutely nothing, even or much like a lot of other, you know, G5 to P4 transfers do. But we just saw Miami and Shannon Dawson get done giving us the likes of, you know, Cam Ward and Xavier Restrepo's epic seasons last year, where both of them finished in the top 10 at their respective positions, right? Miami's going to want to continue to ride that wave. They now get what works for them, hence why they paid Carson Beck to come back for another year. And with all six of their top receiving options from last year gone, there's a ton of opportunity here, and who Miami seeks to get out of the portal, in my opinion, matters quite a bit. Who do they prioritize getting? As of right now, the only person they've really landed is CJ Daniels, right? I understand the thought process that many people have right now, that there's no way Miami comes out of the spring portal session without adding more help at wide receiver. And I totally get that, right? They have the money. They're not afraid to tamper. It's really hard to imagine they're going to be happy going into the season with a starting lineup of CJ Daniels, Ray Joseph, and JoJo Trader, right? Miami, I think, knows they can do better than that, so they'll definitely try. And I get all that. But I also don't think we can really play our cards, especially this early on in the season, based on what may happen. I do think you have to just kind of work with what's in front of you. And right now, that is that CJ Daniels is clearly the number one guy at Miami, right? I have Daniels as my wide receiver 17 right now, which is probably going to sound crazy to a lot of you, considering the fact that he's going wide receiver 60 in drafts. But I'm okay with a massive discount on him right now. This is a dude that if Miami holds tight right now, I think has a 90 target floor, right? At 90 targets, a 70% catch rate over the last two seasons, 16 yards per catch the last 2 years, like, that's a 1,000-yard receiver right there. If he got bumped up to 110 targets because Miami literally has nobody else to throw to, you're looking at a stat line that could get you into the 1,200, 1,300 range pretty quickly, right? I think that right now, a guy that's clearly the best option for Miami going into this year should not be going wide receiver 60. You got him going behind guys like Eric Rivers, who's transferring from FIU to Georgia Tech, Reginald Virgil, going from Miami of Ohio to Texas Tech, Devontae Ross going from Troy to Penn State, Nick Marsh at Michigan State, which is just not a system we love whatsoever. Like, Elliot, maybe you can help me out here. Like, why are people so down on Daniels when, again, as of right now, he's the best option Miami's got, and it's a system we know that's going to want to throw the ball a ton?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the short answer there is they forgot what he did at Liberty and are probably paying more attention to what happened at LSU. While I think that has to be taken into consideration, I mean, Miami's definitely a better spot for him. I mean, if you look at their schedule, it's not a world beater. I mean, they do have Notre Dame to start the year, but outside of that, they can put up points. My question to you would be, what do you expect, obviously as a Georgia guy, what do you expect Carson Beck's performance and output look to be for the 2025 season?
I mean, I still maintain that Carson Beck, had he entered the draft last year, still would have been one of the most talented quarterbacks in the draft pool, right? Do I think he would have eventually made it up over, you know, Cam Ward and stuff like that? No, but I do think the team would have taken a shot on him in the first round. He's got the talent, right? My thing is right now, watching Carson Beck right now, is that, excuse my language, he's got to get his head out of his ass. Like, again, there's just too many distractions going on for him right now, and that does legit worry me, and I think it worries Miami as well right now, that he doesn't seem to have his head on straight, or doesn't seem to have his priorities straight at the very least. So I think Carson, if he understands the system very quickly, he'll be just fine. If Cam Ward can pick up the system in a season, I think Carson Beck will be just fine. Now, obviously, Carson Beck, as of right now, won't have the weapons that Cam Ward had last year. I don't think Carson Beck will be the limiting factor here. So
fair. Yeah, and I mean, I do have I have CJ Daniels ranked at 53, so I have him a little higher than where his current ADP is, or a little earlier than his ADP, but I'm certainly not as low on him as you are.
Yeah, no, I'm probably irresponsibly high
Or high.
on
Yeah,
CJ
or high on.
Daniels right now. But also again, like, I'm not drafting him high, because again, I identified very quickly on that people were not drafting him super high. So I'm like, okay, I'll take the discount here. I'll take a guy that I think should be my
Sure.
wide receiver two as my wide receiver four or five in drafts. So what about you, man? What's a wide receiver that you think is going too late in drafts right now?
Yeah, so my overvalued wide receiver is Jahlil Farouk, a wide receiver at Maryland, who's currently wide receiver 72 with a total ADP of 224. I've been able to pick him up in the last couple rounds in best ball, pretty much on my team in every draft except Carp's best ball three, which you snagged him in the 17th round, which was earlier than I expected. So I whiffed there. But and by the way, if anyone listening wants to get into college fantasy, best ball drafts are easily the most cost-effective way, both just from a financial and time perspective, and an exceptional way to prep for the season, as far as I'm concerned as well. And Ryan Carpenter does just a great job coordinating those drafts, which I do have a link on that page that Jared mentioned earlier, if anyone wants to get in those.
Oh yeah, they're great drafts. I mean, it's $5 per draft. We're not at like some people, like, and I'm not trying to call anybody out here. This is just a fantasy community in general. Like, you try to bring in somebody new to fantasy or college fantasy, and they're just like, "Oh yeah, I just need a buy-in of $100." And I'm just like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa!" Like, let's just do like little $5 drafts to get people from, like, because again, these drafts, not only are they like cheap, but like you get access to a draft board of 30 rounds of players. Right, that's 30 players that you can then shorten all your time down to. If you have no, even if you have no clue who any of these players are, you're like, all right, let's start with the round one players, just look at those guys, and then just go round by round looking at those different guys. It saves you a lot of time in the future. So I
Definitely.
fully endorse it as well.
Yeah, so just getting back to Farouk, I think that he was poised kind of for a breakout year last year prior to his injury where he broke his foot. In 2022, he had 460 yards on 40 targets, and in 23, he had 694 yards on 72 targets. And then last year broke his foot, and on top of that, Oklahoma just was terrible in general. And now he's transferring to a Maryland team that just has a lot going for it, as far as I'm concerned. They lost Ty Felton and Caden Prather, their top two receivers, and that they're vacating 243 targets, which is a ridiculous number. I mean, that's super high. And they were in the top 10 last year in plays per game with 71. They were also in the top 10 as far as pass rate is concerned in 2024 with a 60% pass rate. Their schedule, as far as the Big Ten is concerned, is certainly not a gauntlet. They avoid Ohio State, Penn State, Iowa. They do play Michigan, but outside of Michigan, really like Indiana, Nebraska, maybe Illinois are probably their most difficult opponents. But having said that, they're still likely to play from behind. And on top of that, they lost their top performing running back to the portal in Roman Hemby. So, I think there are some counter arguments to this for sure. I'm personally always hesitant on transfer guys, like we mentioned. They're also rebuilding an offensive line that honestly just wasn't great last year. They also have a little bit of a question mark at quarterback. They lost Billy Edwards and MJ Morris to the transfer portal, and they gained Justin Martin from UCLA, who doesn't have a ton of experience. One start against Penn State last year, but against that start, even though they lost, he was fairly efficient. He completed 73% of his passes, one touchdown, zero interceptions. But it's still a question mark.
I would also argue that, like, let's be honest, Billy Edwards is not exactly the hardest talent in the world to replace at quarterback.
Correct.
So, like, it's not like we're seeing a massive drop off there.
No, but still relying heavily on system here.
Agreed.
New offensive coordinator, Pep Hamilton, coming in from Houston Texans. He was coaching back in 22, and who might push for a more balanced attack, but I think that Locksley's pretty much running that offense. From what I can tell, the end of last year, I know he took over play calling, which honestly probably wasn't a good thing. They kind of fell off the map when he did that, but from a at least from a fantasy points perspective, or I mean from a points per game perspective. But you know, and I think Locksley's probably on the hot seat. So either A, he's gonna let Pep take the reins and take the heat, or he'll himself will take the heat if they don't perform. But and there's a little bit of a competition from Octavian Smith and Shalik Knotts. You know, Smith's their leading returner with 47 targets, but he's not been super efficient. And Knotts, while efficient with his 21 targets, but he just really hasn't broken through after 3 years being on the team. So I just really think Farouk's a great value. Like I said, he's kind of been one of the guys that I've just been letting ride to the last two rounds and just snapping him up. But clearly, I'm going to have to rearrange my rankings a little bit to ensure that I get him more often. But currently, I have him ranked at 66, but I probably will bump that down a little bit. He'll probably end up around kind of in the high 50s.
Here I am once again. I got him at wide receiver 33. So if you want him, Elliot, you're gonna have to pay him. You're gonna have to pay for him. No, I agree with so much of what you said there. Obviously, because I have him even higher than you do and everything. And the other thing to point out with Octavian Smith, right? Like he's not very efficient. He's also not playing in the spot that we want in this offense, right? Like Smith's playing in the slot there.
He's slot.
Shalik Knotts plays on the outside, so maybe a little bit of worry there, but like I don't think Maryland goes out and grabs a guy like Farouk out of the portal and just doesn't use him. I think they know they needed to get a guy with experience who has, like you said, shown in the past that he can be a very effective receiver. He just happened to break his foot last year, right? And Oklahoma said, screw all our wide receivers except for Deion Burks. So, no, I obviously love Farouk. I got him ranked very, very high. I got him ranked, I got him looking at quite a few targets this upcoming year. I got him looking at about 102 targets in my back of the napkin projections because Maryland has peppered their number one guy very, very well the last couple of years. Now, granted, a lot of that comes from Ty Felton getting like 140 something targets last year, but there's no other competition. Who's to say Farouk can't end up doing the same? All right, Elliot, man, I appreciate you coming on today. This was fun. Again, super
Yeah.
knowledgeable guy. Like, I want to have you on more in the future. I'm looking forward to you, like, kind of expanding out your brand and everything, expanding out what you offer to the CFF community and stuff like that. Looking forward to drafting with you more, looking forward to interacting with you more. Again, I'm glad to finally have you on, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, y'all, again, you can go find his awesome work over at baconfuel.start.page. You can also find him on Twitter at Elliot Mays. With that, we have come to the end of our show. Appreciate all of you guys out there for listening. If you guys have not already, make sure you leave a like, a comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube side of things. If you're on the podcast, make sure you follow the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you can. Make sure you check out the rest of the Campus to Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys back here next Monday with another episode of Chasing Natty. Until then, really appreciate you guys and hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.